Each week, we're joined on this show by Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic. And today, for his last segment of 2017, he's going to tell us about some of the trends he's been noticing this year, trends you might have missed through all the headlines. Hi, Derek, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Jeremy. Thank you.
Well, and where would you start with trends of the last year?
Jeremy, if there was one word that I could use to summarize 2017, that word would be antitrust. And I mean that in two ways. First, antitrust, that is the lack of trust that the people now have toward institutions and politics and beyond, and the economic legal definition of antitrust, which is a fear of monopolies and an interest in breaking them apart. 2017 has seen extraordinary institutional distrust. Republicans control everything. They control the White House, the Senate, the Congress. They control a supermajority of governors' mansions and state legislatures. But they're publicly despised. The corporate tax reform that was just passed is one of the least popular tax bills in American history. Obamacare repeal and replace was one of the least popular bills in recent memory, and the party doesn't do very well in national polling. So you have institutional distrust toward the people who are in charge of government. You also have distrust within institutions. Democrats don't trust Republicans or vice versa. The White House doesn't trust Bob Mueller. Nobody seems to trust Donald Trump if you look at his presidential approval ratings. In economics, you have the rise of Bitcoin, which definitely is the story of the last 3 months. Bitcoin is a distributed currency built on a decentralized ledger called blockchain, which is essentially a thesis that fiat currency and centralized control of money is bad. So in many ways, you could say that the interest in Bitcoin and the rise in Bitcoin's valuation is all about institutional distrust itself. And then finally, you have the literal definition of antitrust. You have Donald Trump's Department of Justice going against AT&T and Time Warner's merger. You have the government scrutinizing maybe other mergers like Disney's attempt to combine with Fox. And you have a new enthusiasm, I think, even on the left about antitrust as a central governing principle of liberalism in this country. So just top to bottom, I think this theme of trust is central to 2017 and particularly the lack of it.
Well, and there's also a lack of trust by many for the tech companies, whether it be Facebook or Google or Twitter. They have gotten themselves into trouble in the last year, especially because of what happened with Russian hacking in the election. How do you think Americans are feeling about the big tech companies overall in 2017?
Within media, I've definitely seen a shift in the way that we report on companies like Facebook or Twitter or Tesla. I think in many ways, you know, one way that I think that Marc Andreessen summarized it, a big Silicon Valley investor, he said the narrative has shifted from tech is stupid to tech is evil. That for a long time, the focus was on how Facebook was frivolous, on how Twitter wasn't making any money, on how Tesla was silly. And now it's tech is evil. Facebook is evil. Twitter is evil. Netflix is a monopoly. Google makes too much money. I think that narrative is actually shifting into a third degree. And that is tech is so big that it justifies any merger. CVS and Aetna, they've said that they have to merge to counter Amazon's potential foray into pharmaceuticals. Disney and Fox have said that their potential merger is essentially all about combating Netflix. AT&T and Time Warner, one of the big media mergers that the government is now going up against, have said this is all about competing with Netflix and Facebook and Google across the board. I think you're going to see this in 2018 too, quite honestly, to make a little bit of a prediction. I think you're going to see mergers running rampant across the economy, A, because of the corporate tax reform bill that are going to make these mergers more attractive, but B, because you now have these tech behemoths whose shadow extends all across the economy, and these legacy companies saying the only way that we can compete is for us to band together and merge. And so I think this is a narrative you're going to see a lot or hear a lot in the next year. Tech is so big that it justifies anything.
Now, the scary part of that, if 2018 is a big year for mergers, is that the experts do say that all the mergers and acquisitions happen right before the crash. So we've had a very strong year economically in the last year. The stock market at record levels. A lot of people's 401ks probably up 20 or 25% in the last year. What do you make of how the economy is doing right now? And will we ever see a year like this again?
it's really been a remarkable year for the economy. I mean, I've been coming on the show for a while, and I think that for many years, you and I have talked about how poorly the economy is doing, how disappointing it is. I think I should point out that 2017 has been a really remarkable year. I mean, from top to bottom, the Dow was set an all-time high 70 times. That's once every 5 days.
Yeah.
A lot of people can say, well, you know, that's good for people with 401ks. It's good for investors. But actually, 80% of corporate stock is owned by the richest 10% of the country. So, you know, does that really trickle down? Well, you know, at the same time, unemployment now is nearing an all-century low. It's near 4%, and it could, you know, fall into the mid-threes, honestly, within the next few months. Manufacturing confidence is higher than ever. Confidence among home builders in the construction industry is at an all-century high. Earlier this year, I was talking about fears that legacy retail companies were really taking a hit as Amazon was growing. But holiday sales are now projected to hit their highest levels in 3 years at malls and traditional retail outlets. From top to bottom, you really see just remarkable strength across the economy. And of course, we should focus on the distribution of this growth. Is it growing as much at the bottom as it is at the top? But here again, there's actually some evidence that wages have been growing fastest in the last 18 months at the bottom rather than the middle or the top. So truly, just about anywhere you look in the economy right now in the last 12 months, it seems to be doing pretty well.
Now, there's one stock that I have noticed is not doing very well, and it had been doing very well, and that is Chipotle, the Mexican fast casual chain. We were talking a couple of years ago about how people were looking for Taco Bell prices, but Chili's level of what they were getting, and that seemed to be a really good model for them. What happened with a company like Chipotle?
I think two things. The first is that they had that health scare a few years ago, and that's a huge bummer for any company, but it's particularly a bummer if you're working in a crowded sector that has lots of fresh choices. And fast casual, which is the sector that places like Chipotle and Panera and Cozy kind of inaugurated, has just blown up in the last 2 years, in a good way, positive blown up. Fast casual's totally on fire. I wrote a piece earlier this year on the renaissance of the restaurant industry that you've seen across the country. And it did seem to me anecdotally, when I was going into reporting the piece, that wherever I went, D.C., New York, Boston, Portland, Seattle, everyone said they were having a restaurant renaissance. And indeed, the number of individual restaurants has exploded in fast casual. Total locations have soared by 9% in the last year. But there's actually just too many of them now, so that same-store sales are actually falling by more than 2% annually. So essentially what's happening is that people are eating more at places like Chipotle, but they're eating at the new Chipotles or the new Panera or the new Cozy, which means that Chipotle, Panera, and Cozy, the people that sort of inaugurated this, are all struggling a lot. And they're not keeping up with places like, say, you know, Sweetgreen, which is a salad place that is just, at least anecdotally to me, popping up everywhere. And you know, started in the D.C. area and now is just ubiquitous in New York. So I think that fast casual has grown a lot as a sector, but now it's kind of like television, where we're in a golden age of television, but there's so many different TV shows that no one show is having like, you know, MASH ratings, right? Where like 40% of America is tuning into the same show every week. The exact same thing is happening in fast casual.
All right. Well, we just have about a minute left, Derek, but any other trends you're watching from the last year?
So I just came across this stat this morning, actually. 2017 is within striking distance of being the best year for job creation at bars that we've ever seen. The BLS has been tracking job creation at bars, taverns, and nightclubs for the last few years, and this could set the 30-year record for the most jobs created at these drinking institutions. So in terms of why, well, you know, to oversimplify, there's two reasons why people go out to bars. Either they're really happy, they want to celebrate, or they're anxious and they want to take it out on a whiskey. And so on the one hand, you know, you could say this has been a record year for the economy in many ways. On the other hand, I think that for a lot of people in this country, it's been a stressful year, an anxious year. And so maybe they've wanted to gather their friends and, you know, curl an elbow and have a beer. So maybe for both of these reasons coming together, we are now looking at what could be a record year for job creation at bars in 2017.
All right. Well, I think that we've both earned a drink, Derek. So we'll leave it right there. Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic. Thank you and happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Enjoy that eggnog.